Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In 1992, Los Angeles County saw 1,000 gang-related homicides. At that time, today's guest, Father Gregory Boyle, was serving as pastor of Dolores Mission Church, then the poorest Catholic parish located in an area of highly concentrated gang activity. Father Greg responded to the violence by working with gang members and formerly incarcerated young people. He started an organization that eventually came to be known Homeboy Industries, now the largest gang intervention program in the world. At Homeboy, former gang members get job training, tattoo removal, drug counseling, and many other services. Homeboy also runs the Homegirl Cafe, Homeboy Diner, the only place to buy food in the LA City Hall, the Homeboy Cafe at the LA International Airport, and Homeboy Farmers Markets. Here is a clip from a video called Stand With Us. It was made for Homeboy Industries, and in this clip, you will hear from Andre Hollins.
Gangbangers are more than just gangbangers, they're human beings. And a lot of individuals are born into it, and a lot of individuals are there not because they want to be. What Homeboy Industries did for me, it gave me an opportunity to have a voice. And that's something I didn't have growing up. No one ever took the time to listen.
That is Andre Hollins, who is a former homeboy. That is from a video called Stand With Us. Father Greg Boyle is out with a new book filled with stories like Andre's, filled with stories about the homeboys and the homegirls he works with. It's called Barking to the Choir, The Power of Radical Kinship. In the book, he writes, quote, "I want to capture the homies' voices as a window of truth to soften the images of them often portrayed in TV and movies," end quote. Father Greg Boyle is a recipient of the California Peace Prize and has been inducted into the California Hall of Fame. In 2014, the White House named Father Greg Boyle a champion of change. And Father Greg joins us from the studios of Culver City in Southern California. Hi, Father Greg. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Rose.
Good morning. It's great to have you. I'm a huge fan of your work. You have been doing this for over 30 years, and when you look back on that time and look back at all the homeboys and the homegirls you've worked with, what has really evolved for you the most?
Well, I think part of the issue certainly has been, especially when we lament the fact that we think progress doesn't get made. 30 years ago, a homeboy got death threats, bomb threats, hate mail, you know, and so the demonizing was kind of writ large from the general community. Gang members never saw us that way or responded with hostility. We were always a sign of hope to gang members. But people had so surely and easily demonized this population, so it was a short hop to demonize me for helping them. So that was alarming, and that was difficult in the first 10 years. So things have certainly changed there. Homeboy has certainly, over the last 30 years, altered the way we proceeded in our methodology and our, you know, the emphasis we would give here or there. Whereas jobs were the central piece in the beginning years, trying to locate employment, now healing is the more dominant strain. And so we create a community of tenderness where gang members can feel welcomed and even cherished, and that will lead them to resilience and a new way of living.
You have also changed a lot. I mean, you have buried 220 people. These were homies who you've loved, and they were killed by homies you've loved. You write in your book that you used to get really angry about this. Can you talk about that and just how those emotions have... Well, I'm sure the emotions are similar, but the way that you deal with it has changed?
Well, when you would say, you know, we stand with the demonized so that the demonizing will stop, and you stand with the disposable so that the day will come when we stop throwing people away. In those early years, when I was burying 8 kids in a 3-week period, these were really the disposable kids that no one was really quite alarmed by it. And, of course, I was new at doing this. And I thought, why aren't people absolutely incensed by this violence? And how is it that these lives don't matter? So that was kind of my early years. When I think I mentioned that in the book about that when I would give talks, I would be kind of shake my fist a lot. Human beings involved, and these are kids who were filled with promise, and their lives were ended too soon. And so you wanted people to be moved by their stories. So I think nowadays, it's not that I've become inured to death. I just buried a homie the other day who died of an overdose, and a guy I'd known for 30 years. But you want to appeal to people's goodness. You don't need to harangue them or shake your fist at them, because people will get there more quickly if you appeal to their goodness. And the truth is, you're not making anything up when you do. You're not pretending they're good. That's the essence of who people are. And so once you can get them to connect to the notion that everyone comes into this world wanting the same things, and then something happens, despair or trauma or huge damage or mental illness, something derails that. But nonetheless, we all begin in exactly the same place.
What has really changed when you look at what these young men and women are dealing with? You write that the vast majority of the homies who walk through the doors of Homeboy have histories of trauma, which can lead to disorganized attachment patterns. Mom, typically the primary caregiver, was either frightened or frightening at the idea of her can trigger both approach and avoidance at the same time. You also write that in the high poverty urban communities of LA County, 1 in 3 youth suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder. Every single homie who walks through the doors brings with him or her a storehouse of unspeakable acts perpetrated against them, from torture, abuse, and violence to abandonment, neglect, and terror. What has changed about that, if anything, over the last 30 years?
I don't know if that's changed. I mean, I think that's still part of the landscape, is that, again, our program is not for those who need help. It's only for those who want it. But you have to walk through the door. But once you do, you're welcomed and you're received. But every single folk who walk through the door really do come with that storehouse of unspeakable things that had been done to them. Every single one. And we had sometimes been operating under that myth that somehow their moral compass was out of whack. If only they knew the difference between right and wrong. Mm. And yet none of that, I kind of wish that were the case, but none of that is ever the case. It's, you know, damaged people, if they don't heal, will, you know, continue the damage. And if you don't transform that pain, then you're just going to keep transmitting it. So that's the insight. But I'm 63 years old. I've never had to carry what the young men and women who come through our doors there, I've never had to carry what they've had to carry. So I stand in absolute, total, complete awe of what they carry.
You tell so many incredible stories in your book about the homeboys and the homegirls that you work with. And in reading all of these stories, just like your last book, Tattoos on the Heart, I feel like society just doesn't want to go to these places. We tend to brush a lot of this under the rug. And I'd like to talk about a lot of these stories throughout the show. For one, I mean, this is in the very beginning of your book. There are so many, but you write about Jermaine, and you change the name of all of these homeboys and homegirls. You said, Jermaine came to see me, released after more than 20 years in prison. He's a sturdy African-American gang member, now in his mid-40s. His demeanor is gentle and so, so kind. As I'm speaking with him, I ask if he's on parole, and he says yes. Then I ask him, high control? He nods affirmatively. I hope you don't mind me asking this. How did someone as kind and gentle and tender as you end up on high control parole? Before I go any further, Father Greg, what is high control parole?
Well, if you've really been involved in some heavy-duty crime, and then your time in prison was also marked by, involvement with all sorts of internal political craziness within the prison, then they're going to keep, you know, a greater vigilance on you when you are released. So that's what that is.
And then to go on, you write, Germaine pauses, then says meekly, rough childhood. Both his manner and words make us laugh. His mom was a prostitute, and his father was killed when Germaine, the oldest of three brothers, was 9. After his father's funeral, his mother rented an apartment, deposited all the boys there, walked to the door, and closed it. They never saw her again. In the many months that followed, Germaine would take his two younger siblings and sit on the stoop of neighbors' porches. When the residents would inquire, he'd simply say, "We ain't leaving till you feed us." You write, Father Greg, about so many young people whose parents abandoned them. And you point out that so many in society would say, and they say this to this day, what kind of parents do these kids have? I hear that all the time. And you write, well, what was the parent's situation? Maybe the parent of that parent also left her and him. There's a lot of mental illness, lots of trauma going from generation to generation. It's pretty common for a lot of these youth to be abandoned by their parents, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think it, again, it's not, the point is not to say, oh, well, let's lay blame on the parents, you know.
Right.
You know, you presume always that the answer to every question is compassion. So you're having not just compassion for this kid who has had to fend for himself and his two younger brothers, but you're also, how do you enter into the mind and heart and mental anguish of this mother who is drug addicted, mentally ill, I'm going to presume, carrying her own weight of trauma and damage. And so then suddenly there's nobody outside this circle of compassion. Everybody is included in it. And so that's key, rather than just say, okay, now we're moving on, we're blaming the parents as if that gets us anywhere.
The hard part is to get society to take a step back and look at all of these factors, rather than just say, well, where are the parents? Or this person committed this crime, so lock them up. I mean, I hear that in the Bay Area. We have a lot of inequality here, a lot of car break-ins in San Francisco, you know, a lot of random violence on the street. But rather than get to the root of the problem, you know, the comment is always, we have to find these kids, we have to put more police on the streets. How do you change society's thinking around these issues?
Well, that's kind of the whole point of the book, which is to talk about the power of radical kinship. That there's the notion that if we stand against forgetting that we actually belong to each other, that no kinship, no peace, no kinship, no justice, no kinship, no equality. So somehow all the things we want in our society, peace, justice, and equality, are really byproducts of our own kinship. So if we seek that, you watch what happens. But we always have to push ourselves. I got an email from a homie the other day, who, gang member, married with kids, 9 years sober, and he just comments about the the two parents in Paris, California, who chained 13 kids to their beds. I'm sure you heard about this. And so right away he goes to comments that he's read online, how people are saying, I hope they burn in hell. Mm-hmm. Can't we execute them now? And here's this gang member who's been through so much in his life, who is just at a whole other level of consciousness and compassion, and who just, his heart aches for these parents who did these horrible things. And obviously, that's a higher consciousness. That's where we want people to be. But we get lazy. We want the high moral distance that separates us from these two parents who did this horrific thing. We want to be able to say they don't belong to us. They really aren't part of our tribe. And that's why solutions are evade us, because we can't get there without kinship, without a deep and abiding sense that we really do belong to each other. But that has no exceptions. That's the 13 kids chained and the parents who chained them.
The subtitle of your book, Barking to the Choir, is The Power of Radical Kinship. And you write about kinship throughout the entire book. Can you talk more about what that means to you and your work and how you foster kinship between gang members? A lot of the young people you work with used to be rival gang members.
Yeah, I think part of the issue is to arrive at this exquisite mutuality. So you're always trying to bridge any distance. You don't want to be a barrier to the distance. You want to be a bridge. You want to make sure there is no daylight that separates us, because separation is an illusion. And so Homeboy wants to be what the world is ultimately invited to become, which is a place where everyone belongs, everyone is connected, and everyone has entered fully into this exquisite mutuality. And so there is no sense of superiority. You know, I'm not the great healer, and that gang member is in need of my exquisite healing. It's an acknowledgement that we're all a cry for help and we're all in need of healing. So then everybody ceases to be a stranger to themselves, you know, and you welcome your own wound, so that you aren't tempted to despise the wounded. And so once everybody enters into that, then something remarkable happens, you know, where whatever we saw as division evaporates, which is, you know, kind of an essential message, frankly, during the times in which we currently live, where divisions are writ large and are alarming, and you feel like the impasse is we're going to be unable to be a bridge separating these two groups. So Homeboy, and again, these are homies who hated each other, shot at each other, wouldn't speak to each other. And then they discover that we're not different. We are, in fact, similar. And we all... That's when you discover that everybody was born wanting the same things. And it's a remarkable discovery, but it issues in something quite magnificent, and it's a game changer.
Today we're speaking with Father Greg Boyle, who started Homeboy Industries more than 30 years ago. And Homeboy Industries is the largest gang intervention, rehab, and reentry program in the world. If you're ever in Los Angeles, you can take a tour and learn about their services, drug counseling, tattoo removal is very popular there. And then you can also eat at the Homegirl Cafe. There's also the Homeboy Cafe at LAX and the Homeboy Diner, the only place to buy food in the LA City Hall. And Father Greg is out with a new book called Barking to the Choir, The Power of Radical Kinship. And if you have any questions or comments for Father Greg, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. If you work with any similar organizations in your area, we need so many more, because it's just the work they do is so important and so credible. Incredible. We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255.
This program was originally broadcast in January. We're not taking calls. Thank you for enjoying the show.
If your life has been affected by violence, if you've dealt with violence in the home, were there any resources for you? You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Father Greg, I wanted to ask you about some of the homegirls that you work with. You quoted Monica in your book. She said, "I was raised on the streets. She was homeless, a gang member, a survivor. You write that her behavior at Homeboy can often be alarming. She once kicked in our glass front door, and on another particularly wild rampage, she went into our kitchen and began to gulp down a purple all-purpose cleaner called Fabuloso. It later became her nickname among the homies." What strikes you about the homegirls that you work with? And what are the differences between the homegirls and the homeboys?
Well, in LA County, for example, there are 120,000 gang members, supposedly, 1,100 gangs. And of those 120,000, 3 to maybe 5% are female. So it's a very kind of small and narrow group. To be a gang member, a female gang member, jumped in officially into a gang is a kind of a extremely rare person. If you are that person, then chances are you are, you know, just about everyone I've ever met, female gang member, has been sexually abused, horrifically abused in any other way, the receiving end of great violence. And so in terms of damage, the trauma is high for a female gang member. So, and then the mental illness issues, as with that woman you called Monica. I always have to remember, I changed all the names. I can't remember who is who. Mm-hmm. But she's, you know, quite mentally ill. Mm-hmm. And she's lovely, and she's doesn't work at Homeboy, but she's there every day, and we always help her and just keep her from living on the streets and making sure she takes her meds and that kind of thing. But she's a female gang member, all tatted down, and just a world of abuse and terror and torture was what her upbringing brought her. So, and no kid is ever seeking anything when he or she joins a gang, but they're always fleeing something. And the women who join gangs are fleeing a great deal more.
The Homegirl Cafe is pretty incredible. Can you tell us about who came up with this idea? And tell us a little bit about this. You have a few kind of funny stories about the people who go to the Homegirl Cafe and the interactions they have with the girls who work there.
Yeah, well, my receptionist 100 years ago when I was pastor at Dolores Mission was a woman named Patty Sarate. And she was this amazing chef and foodie on the side. And then she opened her own little storefront restaurant. And I told her, the minute you want to turn this thing into the Homegirl Cafe, you let me know. It was named something else, obviously. And then one day, years later, she came in and she said, I'm ready. And so that's what we did. So we just slapped this big sign that said Homegirl Cafe. She had her absolutely gourmet Mexican food, very healthy and very different. And then now it's been around for 15 years, I guess. And so, yeah, and so it's a who's who. If you've ever been to Homegirl Cafe, it's kind of a place where people drop by and Vice President Joe Biden came for lunch with Motorcade and Secret Service and Jack Black and Forrest Whitaker and a lot of elected officials.
Today we're joined by Father Greg Boyle, who founded Homeboy Industries more than 30 years ago. Homeboy is the largest gang intervention, rehab, and reentry program in the world. It is in Los Angeles. If you're ever down there, you can take a tour, meet some of the homeboys and homegirls, and eat at the Homegirl Cafe. In the book, Father Greg writes, "We spend so much time asking where our suffering comes from, it leaves us little time to ask where it leads. In the high poverty urban communities of LA County, 1 in 3 youth suffers from PTSD. That is twice the rate of soldiers returning from war. Every single homie who walks through our doors brings with him or her a storehouse of unspeakable acts perpetrated against them, from torture, abuse, and violence to neglect and terror." This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We will be discussing two separate investigations on the U.S.-Mexico border and the wall. USA Today journalists flew, drove, and explored every foot of the 2,000-mile border to document what exists today and how that would be affected by a wall. And then ProPublica exposes the federal government's use of eminent domain to seize land for a fence along the border. We hope you can join us for that. We will also talk about the latest deportations. And then on Monday for our One Planet series, we'll be speaking with climate scientist Michael Mann about the attacks on climate science, the death threats that he receives, and the new science that's coming out about extreme weather in the East Coast. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, yourcall@kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's show with Father Greg Boyle, he founded Homeboy Industries. Over 30 years ago, it's the largest gang intervention, rehab, and reentry program in the world. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. He brings up so many amazing points in his book. You know, one of the most important is, how can we change the way society talks about, looks at, deals with gang members or young people of color who come from marginalized communities who are dealing with violence in the home, rather than saying, lock them up, let's put more police on the streets? If you've dealt with this in your life, if you work for an organization that works on these issues, we'd love to hear from you. You can also send us an email, yourcall@kalw.org. Father Greg, before the break, we were talking about the Homegirl Cafe. And in your book, you infuse so many funny stories with you and the homeboys and the homegirls, sometimes during really intense situations. And you have a funny story about what happened when Diane Keaton came to eat at the Homegirl Cafe.
Yeah, she came with a regular guy who's there once a week, and her waitress was Glinda. And Glinda, a big girl, been there, done that, tattooed, felon, gang member, parolee. She has no clue who Diane Keaton is, so she's taking her order, and Diane Keaton says, well, what do you recommend? And Glinda rattles off the three dishes she particularly likes, and then Diane Keaton says, well, I'll have that second one. That one sounds really good. And then, for some reason, at that moment, something dawns on Glinda, and she looks at Diane Keaton. She says, wait a minute. I feel like I know you from somewhere. You know, like maybe we've met. And Diane Keaton decides to deflect it humbly, and oh gosh, I don't know, I suppose I have one of those faces that people think they've seen before. And then Glinda goes, no, now I know, we were locked up together. And when somebody came to my office after that and told me that story, it just took my breath away. And I don't believe we've had any further Diane Keaton sightings now that I think of it. But the truth is, there you have kinship. You know, part of it is putting yourself in the vicinity of the other, but especially those on the margins. Mm. You know, we're not invited to the margins to make a difference at the margins. We're invited to the margins so that the folks at the margins will make me different. Right. And I don't have any doubt that Diane Keaton was reached by this woman and touched and suddenly, a very large female gang member, heavily tattooed and intimidating, is a really interesting and funny, charming, delightful human being. Now, this shouldn't be news to us, but it is. But that's okay. We're just kind of encountering the other and then entering into this exquisite mutuality where... there is no us and them. There's just us.
Let's hear a clip from a short video about the Homegirl Cafe. And in this clip, you will hear from Stephanie.
When I first started gangbanging, it wasn't so much.
Oh, did we have a computer glitch? All right, we'll play that. Let me know when it's free, and then we'll play it again. Father Greg, can you talk about what it's like for some of these young girls when they get out of prison and then enter the doors of Homeboy? How do they get connected with the cafe, and do you have any stories you'd like to share about just what it's like for them to all of a sudden become waitresses or make pastries or, you know, work the cash register?
Well, The centerpiece is our 18-month training program, so both men and women, that's, you know, why they walk through the doors often enough, because it's a paid gig. And so they'll say, you know, I just need a job. You know, I say, well, we don't want anybody here who's here for the check. We only want folks who are here for the change. And so there are phases before they ever get to the cafe or the bakery or any of our other social enterprises. So a lot, again, the emphasis is healing. So therapy, lots of classes, people working in what we call the cohorts with the navigator. And so they're working alongside people they used to really fight with. So everything is getting softened. And every man and woman who walks through the door comes with, huge chronic toxic stress. So they kind of carry it like a backpack, and they're endlessly in survivor brain. So if we can kind of get them to loosen off that backpack, here, let's just leave it over here. And then they find security and safety in a community, and all sorts of levels things are happening that community trumps gang. Then they kind of go, wow, this is what community really looks like. This is more family than family, more home than home. I've never known this before. Mm. And so that kind of has to happen before we kind of send them off to the cafe. And then it's, you're training to soft skills and be able to move on beyond our 18 months to employment outside of homeboy. But before then, they're gaining resilience and they're re-identifying who they are and they're discovering their truth and inhabiting it and knowing that now they've always been exactly what God had in mind when God made them. Now they're inhabiting that fullness of nobility. And now nothing can stop them once they leave us.
When I visited Homeboy, I spoke with a number of homeboys and homegirls, and they said that when they were in jail, people were talking about Homeboy Industries. And people said you should really go there because they will genuinely help you. Are there any other resources? I mean, L.A. is a big place. Are there any other resources for these young people when they first get out of jail?
I would say no.
Wow.
Not really, Part of the thing with Homeboy, though, is the comfort level. Mm-hmm. I give talks all over the country. When you bump into programs that are comparable or similar or trying to reach the same population, the number one question I always get asked is not, how do you fund this? But they always say, how do you get this population to show up there? And I have to admit, in exactly 30 years of doing this, that has never been an issue for us. We never have to recruit. We never have to beat the bushes. We never have to, wait. Maybe they won't come in today. But people just, pour in. And so that's not an issue. And part of the thing is people are comfortable there. So 120,000 gang members in LA County, I suspect there isn't one gang member who doesn't know where we are, what we do. And yet, maybe they're not ready to come. But come when you're ready.
Hmm. We have that clip now. This is from a short video about the Homegirl Cafe. And in this clip, you will hear from Stephanie.
I wanted to do it. When I first started gangbanging, it wasn't so much that it was something new to me. It was something that I was already comfortable with. It was something I seen on a daily basis. Like, that's what I was born into. I was a kid having on my dad, just me in blue, black, and gray. It was certain colors I couldn't wear. Like, for a long time, I couldn't wear red because it was the Bloods. I was around money. I was always around guns. I was always around weapons. I was always around drugs. I was always around people either getting drunk or somebody getting beat up. Growing up, that's why I used to see my dad do a lot of stuff. Hop out, we'd be driving, hop out to see one of his enemigos and do his stuff on him. It's like a code that you live by. You don't say too much. And what you see, that's just what you see. You either gonna grow from it or you're gonna let it eat you alive. And I took it as a lesson.
That is Stephanie. That's a clip from a short video called Homegirl by Lucy Nicholson. And today we are speaking with Father Greg Boyle, who founded Homeboy Industries more than 30 years ago. It has since evolved into the largest gang intervention, rehab, and reentry program in the world. And he's out with a new book called Barking to the Choir, The Power of Radical Kinship. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.com. O-R-G. We got a call from Ariane in San Francisco who couldn't stay on the line. Ariane is a clinical psychologist who just wanted to emphasize how these young people need love and respect, and that's hard to supply. And also to talk about taxes. Oh, Ariane is back on. Okay, let's hear from Ariane. Hi, welcome to the show.
Yes, hello. I just want to emphasize that if we want to live in a civilized society, we have to devote some money to these problems. These problems are not going to go away. Mm-hmm. 97% of the people who are incarcerated get out. And so that means they're back in our communities, and like all of us, they just want their basic needs met. Housing, food, the chance to better themselves. They're no different from any of us. And when we open our hearts and show them that they can contribute meaningfully, that they're important, that they're worthy of respect, we can meet them halfway. That's really what they're looking for. And sometimes that's hard to do because their behavior is riddled by trauma, and so there's sometimes some overreaction. It's like when you have an inflammatory response in your immune system, when your cells get inflamed, because there's been, you know, a viral attack or something. When someone's had repeated trauma, that has to be processed over time. So I love the father's approach, in which he's not just doing a one-shot-fits-all approach. He's coming in and interacting with troubled young adults over and over again to give them the hope and the possibility of having different kinds of experiences. That's what I like. Thank you so much, Father. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. You Father know, I think part of that model, you know, talking about the kind of the medical model, if you will, or see this as a community health issue, what's happening in a lot of parts of the country, and Chicago is notable in this, is that they'll go, let's just silence the bullets. So how can we stop the shooting? Mm-hmm. Now, that feels like a sensible thing to do. And yet, how is it different from just deciding to calm the cough of a lung cancer patient without addressing the lung cancer? It just doesn't work. Even if it's for a moment, you go, wow, last night was a quiet night. But you haven't addressed what this is about. What language is this violence speaking? So if you want to infuse hope to folks for whom hope is foreign, you want to heal trauma and damage, and you want to deliver mental health services in a timely and culturally appropriate way. But that's all about healing. So a educated inmate or gang member may or may not go back to prison, or an employed one may or may not go back to prison. But I would absolutely guarantee that a healed one won't ever go back to prison. And that's kind of the principle at Homeboy. That it took us 30 years to kind of refine it because we always fell for, oh, if only they're educated, if only they knew more, if only they had these skills, if only they just had a job. And then we saw that that wasn't correct because they'd be toppled by things all the time because they didn't know who they were in the face of what they had been through. And so if they didn't heal, they weren't on solid ground. But now they are when they leave Homeboy. There's an essential, fundamental healing that happens.
Well, thank you for calling, Ariane. And you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Today we're speaking with Father Gregory Boyle, author of Barking to the Choir, The Power of Radical Kinship. He began Homeboy Industries more than 30 years ago. It's the largest gang intervention program in the world. Father Greg, the other thing these young people want to do is break the cycle of violence. You've got a lot of stories of new parents in your book who are trying so hard to break that cycle. You write about a homie named Cruz who spent his last dollars taking a Metrolink train 60 miles to L.A. from San Bernardino, where he's relocated his girlfriend and his newborn to avoid the dangers and desperation of his previous gang life. He had a part-time job but couldn't get his boss to give him more hours. And he was in your office telling you about the pressures and the needs of family. He's got no safety net. He says there's no food in the fridge, no lights, no bus fare. And he had a hard time paying his rent. And I just feel like with the inequality in L.A., the Bay Area, really across the country, these problems are just going to get worse. I mean, I have friends who are teachers saying, if we don't deal with this, my second grader is going to be homeless by the time they hit high school. So when you have government officials visit you, Father Greg, and you speak all around the country with homies and home girls, I mean, what do they say to you about funding? It seems like something like this should be taxpayer funded. It's kind of a no-brainer in a society that cares about its people. If we had
the only way to, the only way to get there is by, you know, appealing to their hearts, and because unless you really want to enter into the fullness of relational kinship, then it won't make any sense. You know, no one's going to just. That's why I'm kind of not in the big policy kind of mode. I mean, obviously policy is important. Mm. And obviously you need government to fund. As of this upcoming September, we will officially receive exactly no money from the government, which is crazy.
None.
You know, because especially in L.A. County, we're the largest gang intervention program on the planet, and we're in L.A. County. And now we're at a place where it just all sort of peters out, state, federal, and city. And part of that is we're victims of our own success. You know, people go, oh, they'll be fine. They'll land on their feet. And politicians always want to start the new thing. You know, they want to reinvent the wheel, and they want to slap their name on it. And it's frustrating. But you want people to kind of invest, you know, what if we were to invest in people rather than just incarcerate our way out of our problems?
We just did a show with Daniel Ellsberg, who released the Pentagon Papers, which is credited with stopping the Vietnam War. And we were talking about all of these military contracts that are given out on a daily basis, hundreds of millions of dollars with no public scrutiny, hardly any media coverage. A number of listeners are writing in asking about funding. So there's, you get no funding from the federal, state, or local governments?
We do at the moment, but it will all be gone by September. So, you know, you get these three-year grants, a Department of Labor grant, a county probation thing, you know, special kind of programs and projects, and we're always applying for them. So we're a $19 million annual operation. So $9 million of that comes from revenue generated by our nine social enterprises. But it means we have to raise $10 million a year, which is the most extraordinary lift. It's a heavy lift, and we just make it. And I always think, oh, that's crazy, you know? I mean, the truth is, and no offense to pet owners, but if we were an animal shelter, we'd be endowed. We really would not have to fundraise again if we were an animal shelter. But we're not. We're a place where folks who are a whole lot more than the worst things they ever did, tattooed and felons, and we only work with the most belligerent and violent and people with really difficult records, because we want to have an impact, a singular impact on public safety. That's who we work with. And so it's so frustrating, because we have to so struggle to raise money every year. And I think that's, we're not there yet, but we'll get there.
Father Greg Boyle is the founder of Homeboy Industries, the largest gang intervention program in the world, wildly successful, and the small amount of government funding that they receive will run out in September. Father Greg, just another quick minute on this one. I remember when you were having some financial problems and a lot of people were talking about it online and trying to raise money. What happens after September? Do you have to reapply or what?
Yeah, I mean, we're always on the lookout for, you know, government, our, you know, proposals that are out there that we would qualify for. And we're always kind of beating the bushes in terms of going to probation, which has a ton of money, frankly, in LA County, and money that's been designated from the state to give to community organizations. And they're for some reason having a really hard time doing that. And which is, it's meant for programs like Homeboy. So, you know, you're always doing battle with that. But we're kind of the Bernie Sanders of nonprofits, you know, with thousands and thousands of friends who send the $25 check a month and lots and lots of people who generously give that way. You know, and we could probably use somebody, a heavier hitter who could come in and so we didn't have to worry. But, you know, that day will come and we've been around for a long time and we've had moments and where I had to lay off folks and that was in 2010. So we've had good 8 years, you know. But we're a good bet, but we're a tough sell because if you look at our folks, they're the folks on the margins. They're the easily despised and the readily left out. And I wouldn't work with anybody else but them. Mm-hmm. And it's the privilege of my life to know them. And the day won't ever come when I have more courage or I am more noble or I am closer to God than these folks. And so you just plod along and hope someone wins the lottery and remembers us.
Or a wealthy person in Hollywood can take that $10 million paycheck they get for one movie and write you a check.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. That's right.
We have an email from Catherine who says, I'm really moved by your guest and his radical kinship. I want to shout out to a Bayview organization called the Old School Cafe. It's a youth-run supper club that provides job training and life skills for youth at risk. It's doing an incredible job to give youth hope, support, and skills to turn their lives around. Wow. Thank you, Catherine. I have not heard of that. We'll check it out and maybe do a show.
It's a great place. You got to go to it.
Wow. That's great. Thank
you. I've been there. I've spoken there at it. And it's really a wonderful place.
And it's oldschoolcafe.org. That's school with a K. Let's hear from Bruce in San Francisco. Hi, Bruce. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hey, good show. Father, thank you for your work. I have a question about our Catholic institution. Right down the road from where you are, a school closed last year, St. Charles, in the Mission District, and they served immigrants and poor people. My question is, it seems to me every year, at least in our archdiocese, we have 56 elementary schools. These schools struggle, and I'm sure down in L.A., and as we were growing up as Catholics, these schools were open to the poor, the immigrant, and so much now it's for the privileged, our schools. Can you give a sense of where you are in terms of understanding that? Do you think the church proper is really supporting the kind of work you're doing? And how can we support our immigrant community through our schools? I'll take it off the air. Thank you.
Well, yeah, I understand exactly what you're talking about. And the whole Catholic elementary school, parochial school system was absolutely designed for poor immigrant communities. So, but people have to pay the bills, and it gets difficult. My parish was deemed the poorest parish in the city, largely because of the size of its subsidy for its school and the church. But, you know, Pope Francis longs, he says, for the church to become a poor church for the poor. And that's what you hope for. And I can remember Whoopi Goldberg was asked in Vanity Fair, who's the living person you most admire? And she said, Pope Francis. And then she said, yeah, he's going with the original program. And everybody understands what the original program is, which is to stand at the margins so that the margins get erased and to imagine a circle of compassion and imagine nobody standing outside of it. And it's about dismantling the barriers that exclude and knowing that the widow, orphan, and the stranger, the poor, these are folks who know what it's like to have been cut off. And because they do, they are the trustworthy guides for the rest of us to lead us to the kinship of God. And so it's not for nothing that Jesus stood with the poor and invites us to stand in the same place.
Well, Father Greg, thank you so much for joining us. And you take trips around the country with homeboys and homegirls. And I know you've been in the Bay Area, but next time you're here, we'd love to have you all in studio.
That would be great. It'd be a privilege.
Great. Thank you so much. Stay healthy. Thank you for all the work you do, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Father Greg Boyle is author of Barking to the Choir, The Power of Radical Kinship. He writes that every single homie who walks through our doors brings with him or her a storehouse of unspeakable acts perpetrated against them. Torture, abuse, violence, abandonment, neglect, and terror. When homies are finally ready and able to tell their stories, they can claim that pain and take control of it. You can find more information about Homeboy Industries at yourcallradio.org. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We will discuss two investigations on the U.S.-Mexico border and the wall. Last summer, journalists from USA Today flew, drove, and explored every foot of the nearly 2,000-mile border to document what exists today and how that would be affected by a wall. A ProPublica series exposes the federal government's use of eminent domain to seize land for a fence along the border. We will also talk about the latest deportations on tomorrow's media roundtable. Your Call is produced here at KALW. If you missed any of our past shows, on Monday we talked about the connections between environmental and social justice. We marked MLK Jr. Day by speaking with former EPA head of environmental justice, Mustafa Ali. And then we spoke with Daniel Ellsberg about his new book, The Doomsday Machine. Yesterday, we talked about the resistance. You could podcast the show at yourcallradio.org or wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at yourcallradio. Email show ideas and feedback to yourcall@kalw.org. Thanks to Laura Wenis for producing today's show. Lauren Schechter is our social media producer, and Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.